Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather around your iPhone. It's time for This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob Forrest. And we have a very special guest today who has a situation.
Yeah, we do.
That I can't wait to hear about.
But before we hear about the situation.
And Dr. Drew is sick.
I know. So you'll hear me coughing and sneezing. But, and Adam, I'm sorry, you're familiar with me coughing into the mic. And
That's fine. Ruin your own show. I don't care. Thank
you. I want to promote Adam's stuff.
Normally you ruin my show.
AdamCarolla.com is where you can get everything. Adam and I have a show every day, Adam and Dr. Drew's show. But he has a documentary, The 24-Hour War. It's out now, right?
Yep.
It is awesome. It's about Le Mans.
That's right.
And it's about the... You don't know about this.
No.
It's about the high drama that went on between the chief high executives and sort of, I guess, owner of Ferrari. Ferrari and Ford. And they fought it out.
It was just Ford and Ferrari, like the two guys. It wasn't like,
right.
Executives.
Well, but the Ford guy became one of the chief executives. I think Ferrari owned it, actually.
Well, Ford was Henry Ford II.
Yeah.
Not Henry Ford.
Right.
But
right.
Other than that, he ran the place.
Yeah. And it's a great film filled with not only just high drama and what went on between these icons of, you know, the auto industry at the time, but it's all the classic footage and stuff. It's really a blast to watch. And, you know, Netflix has been airing the Steve McQueen Le Mans thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not half the film that yours is.
Thanks. Look, documentaries in the car world are usually kind of weak. It's more... You know, the guys who know how to make the documentaries make them about the woman of color who plays the cello but is struggling with her sexuality.
Right.
Like, that's
a
who they...
That's a
But no, those people make those documentaries,
yeah, right.
And the gearheads make the car documentaries, but they're not very good at making documentaries.
Right, right, right.
So we are guys who are good at making documentaries, making... Gearhead documentary.
Hey, speaking of which, my son has suddenly shown interest in doing documentaries. Can I send him over to talk to your guy?
Yeah.
You guys are doing one right now. Can you talk about it?
We're doing three.
They're one on K-Rock, right?
Yep. We're doing one on K-Rock. We're doing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. You should have him.
That would be so great.
I mean, he was there during all that early stuff.
Well, we're going to get everybody.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Are you having trouble getting
going? Is Freddie Snakeskin around?
Yeah, yeah. They're all around.
Where does he live in L.A.?
I think he's in
Arizona.
Yeah. But everyone's around. I mean, getting an interview. Everybody.
Yeah, we're getting everybody.
Was Freddie the original main guy?
I don't know. I mean, we're just starting to get into it. We've done is we've interviewed Beck and Green Day and some of the other guys that played the Acoustic Christmas a few weeks ago. That's where we've started. And we've collaborated with CBS and K-Rock so that we've become partners so that we can get all the archival footage and do all the work.
Fantastic.
So that's exciting.
But we are underway on that. We are well underway on Willie T. Ribbs, who's the first black man to drive at the Indianapolis 500.
It's a great story.
His whole story with Bill Cosby being his sponsor and all the stuff with that. And then
what stuff with that?
It's pretty crazy. And then Carroll Shelby story as well.
The Shelby story comes out in Le Mans, the 24-Hour War. And you don't realize, I mean, that's a name that everyone that grew up in the 60s, 70s, and 80s knows the name. There's a little shop in Long Beach, a couple guys, right?
Venice.
Venice, I beg your pardon.
With young guys.
Yeah, it was crazy. Just these guys just, you know, just
well, some things. Of those guys we're interviewing now are in good shape and in their early 70s.
Wow.
So this stuff's taking place in the early 60s. They had to be 20, 21, 19 when they're working around those shops.
What's your guy's name that does the docs?
Nate Adams.
Nate. I did like a couple hours with him a year ago on the K-Rock thing.
Oh, you did. That's right. Yeah. So, yeah, we got a few.
But I didn't do it on camera. We were just helping him flesh out what he had to do.
But then we're going to go get you, and we'll get Jimmy and Carson and Bob and
the radio station. Else. They were, I always say, K-Rock was right place, right time.
Well, right.
That's
and
it really was.
And that was, right, of course. And it was lightning in a bottle. And Rick Carroll was the main guy. What Freddie was always sort of champion for was he invented the drop. Remember hearing the dragnet drops? Thanks. I got it. Right. Boom.
Right.
Remember the drops and the cartoon drops? He invented that phenomenon.
He and Don Bowles from the Germs, the drummer from the Germs, lived in Arizona, and they had a pirate radio station, and they still have tapes of them where they did Super Satan Weekend. I remember that. And they just did whatever they wanted to. They didn't cuss so that the cops didn't come after them.
Right.
But they did really funny,
crazy.
That's
when radio stations, like, you know, people could own them. And there was, it would be great if you could find the old time sort of owners and stuff. Because those guys used to walk out they would deal in the back of the radio station with paper bags full of cash.
We're going to do everything. I mean, this could be a multi-part affair, but so those are the three that are.
So congratulations.
So you've become a documentary filmmaker, but I've always wanted to know, how did you get into cars? Why are you so obsessed with cars? What was the first thing?
I like mechanical stuff.
As a kid?
Yeah. I like the mechanics of stuff. I remember as a kid looking at Schwinn and looking at a Huffy and thinking that Huffy was a piece of shit and the Schwinn was nicely made.
You could tell.
Yeah, I could tell by the way the joints were welded and the way they extruded things and the way the Huffy gooseneck was made out of a sort of pot metal, and the other one, the Schwinn one, was nicely cast and then polished and knurled and things like that. Like, you could see the I remember looking at the machining on pieces of it. The Huffy, everything on the Huffy looked like it was stamped out of tin.
Yeah.
And the Schwinn was this beautiful cast stuff that was then nickel plated or chrome plated, nicely shaped and polished and stuff. And I remember just sort of looking at that stuff and looking at an anodized aluminum rim with an aluminum hub versus just the steel rim with the steel hub. And I just remember thinking, I love that. That's so much better than that one. And
I don't think anyone has ever spoken so romantically about a bicycle.
No, but I was right with him. Because the Huffy, after a while, the thing that goes down through the frame that has the handlebars on it, that would all get wiggly in there.
Well,
everything was a mess.
But then he had no money and no access to anything. He had to fix everything himself.
Did you have a Huffy?
Yeah, I had Huffy. Well, it wasn't that I had to fix everything myself.
As a young adult, you did.
Well, everyone had to fix everything themselves, like sort of where I come from. But I was willing, as a young person, when I was, you know, 9 years old or 10 years old or whatever it is.
That's Drew's just dying over there. Ignore it.
I was willing to go, like, you know, you for Christmas you get $10 from your stepdad and $20 from your parents and $10 from your grandparents, and if you pool all that money together, you could get a whole Huffy bike for $65, or you could get a set of Redline forks and a Motomag rim and a pair of cool cranks, or just the frame and the forks, but the good stuff.
Yeah.
So I would always go, I'll just take the forks and the frame of the good stuff and wait.
Wow.
Or wheel and deal or figure out what I got to do to now get, I'll get the rims for my birthday.
So it'd bike parts strewn all over his bedroom. Well,
but for like Christmas, you know, right. Yeah, service porch. But I wanted the good stuff. I always wanted the good stuff. So when I looked at anything, any part of a house or anything mechanical or anything with wheels or anything, I just look at it and I'd look at the difference. I go, that's the good stuff. Like, you climb inside a Jaguar and you climb inside a Chevy and you you feel the difference, and you want the. It's not an aesthetic thing. It's more of a, ooh, we see how this is.
Craftsmanship.
Well, but it is. My car, like, I just like fast cars, right? So when I was a kid, I saved my money because I worked jobs. I got an MGC. You know what that is?
Yeah.
Six-cylinder MG. Well, what they don't tell you when you buy a used six-cylinder MG, that you have to rotate the rims because they go on these sprockets.
Spindles. You know,
yeah. And so I'm driving down the street, I hit the brakes, and the wheel just came. It just broke.
That thing had knockoffs or lugs?
It slid on to grooves.
Yeah, right? That's a spindle, and it had a single knockoff.
Yeah.
Not lug nuts, but a single knockoff.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then I bought the car for $1,900. To fix that thing was like $800, which I didn't have.
I was thinking about the deprivation in your service porch bedroom. Did you ever hear? Have you heard Bob's story ever?
No, let's hear it. Well, the hubs are bad enough.
That was pathetic. But no, my sister's my mother, and it's
like everybody. It's like whatever. You sister know, moms.
Oh yeah, my mom had that.
Did she?
Well, she had that with her grandma being her mom.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that.
Somebody gave birth, and she thought
his grandma was his mom, but it was his sister.
But my mom was my sister.
Yes, but the person you called your mom was your grandmother.
Right. Yeah, it's a mess.
And your mom was dropped off by her mom at your grandmother's mother's house.
My mom was collected from Child Protective Services by the grandparents, my grandmother, who's the mom's version of it, is insane today. Yeah. Which is,
and this is in L.A.
Yeah, this is in
this
L.A.
Is, mine was in L.A. too. Yeah. There was a lot of shady shit going on.
She was like, you know, I just went out to dance practice at the Hollywood Bowl, like, you know, when she was probably a flapper or something, like when she was 19. And when I got back, we'd asked the upstairs neighbor to watch, you know, Mrs. Beasley upstairs to watch Mom. And when we got back, she'd taken her to Child Protective Services. And I said, well, why would she do that?
Right.
Because all I ever do is go, why? And my other bigger question is, what would they say if I asked them? So they said,
what's in it for her? Why would she do that?
I'm going to babysit your two-year-old. Thank you. All right. Then you come back and you go, where's Chris? Oh, I dropped her off at Child Protective Services. Like, how does that play out? And then I said to her, why did she do that? And why would she do that? And give me some motivation as to why this woman who lived in your building would do that. And she said she was in love or, you know, enamored with my husband. And she wanted us to stay. She knew we were moving. And this was a ploy to get us to stay. And I thought, oh, wait a minute. Now, this is worse because who would stay
with that neighbor?
Why is this motivation? Like, watch the kid and bake you lasagna. There's motivation to stay. Drop the kid off at Child Protective Services. There's no motivation.
Get the fuck out of here.
But did they stay?
I have no idea, but the kid, but I, no, I eventually everyone left, and but I don't remember pursuing that line. Like, well, hold on. Did you have a lease? Like, I wasn't any of the, you have a cleaning deposit? I was like, first off, you're lying. Like, yeah, none of this makes sense. And then.
So is this why you have this theory like me? I think you share, every story I hear about you is this very similar. I have no patience for the victimization of people. They're like victims. Oh, you know, this thing, I grew up neglected. And you're very sympathetic to that. And I'm not sympathetic to that. And I think when you grow up in chaos, you're less sympathetic to lesser stories than your own.
I don't want to answer for you, but I would argue sort of between you and me. He would say, no, I'm sympathetic to it, but you're not helping them by kowtowing to that. Tell them to get their shit together.
That's what we do most of the time. Addicts are victims of these bad childhoods that end up taking drugs. The whole narrative's always been a little foggy for me.
Well, I just, you know, there's this kind of a, look, you know, we're all victims of something. Now, it's real easy to sit around for my mom to be a victim. But then there's people that come home from wars, missing limbs, and then they could be victims. And then there are people that were born with serious medical issues, and they get to be bigger victims. And then there are people who die in dirigible accidents, and they get to be... Like, there's always someone who can trump your victimhood, who's worse off, who's better off. And by the way, no matter how good off things may have been for somebody, you could always... Look, if you throw a dinner party... You could find the guy you think you've had the biggest silver spoon in their mouth, and you could still go find somebody else who had a bigger silver spoon in their mouth, yep. And you could find someone who's faced the most adversity, and you could go find somebody who'd tell you a story about their twin being killed in a car crash when they were nine, whatever it is.
The different thing is to let yourself be destroyed by this past trauma.
Yeah, that's so what... the thing is, like, there's always somebody ahead of you, and there's always someone below you. So why are we sitting around trying to figure out the order of things, and why aren't we just getting on with the work
that's
of
it.
Life?
Okay, so I pose that question to you, Drew. Why don't we tell addicts they need to get on with the process of life and taking responsibility?
I have no problem saying that, but some of them just can't.
They can't,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Most of the celebrity rehab crowd can't, right?
They, not in the condition they're in.
But
it's a little unrealistic.
I'm with Bob in that, I mean, you can't, but then when you start telling them why they can't, then it becomes something. And it's like, I read a tweet from Bernie Sanders today. Or I didn't read a tweet. Well, somebody forwarded me a tweet.
I didn't think you were a follower of him.
Somebody forwarded me a Bernie Sanders tweet, and it was like 3/4 of young black Americans will spend at least 1 year in poverty before now in the age 18, or, you know, under the poverty line. And he was appalled by that. But it's like, thank you, guy who has a couple of homes, for being appalled.
Yeah.
What's your fucking plan?
Yeah.
I got a plan. I get shouted down all the time. Focus on family. Focus on education. Let's see if we can right this shit. But you're just over there being appalled with the rest of your buddies. They're either taking turns patting each other on the back to see who's more appalled by this statistic. And my whole thing with everything is just, all right, be appalled. Now what are we doing? What's the plan? Born without a limb, born to your family, born to my family, born to whoever's family. What's the plan? What are we going to do?
How are we going to get out of this?
And
that's almost non-existent in America now.
Well, I do think
it's coming back.
I think it's why Trump got elected, because it was the first time in a long time that people heard people saying things like it was crazy, because all the speeches I've heard in the last 8 years or so and before have been like, we got to come together to be together.
For the children.
Because we'll be
for
stronger together. Because
but for the children.
And listen.
It's always about the children.
And no children should grow up in poverty. No child. And if one child grows up without a world-class education.
It's all the rhetoric and no solutions.
And it's like, I remember I was just, Trump's speech was on like the radio. And he was given a laundry list of stuff. He was just given a laundry list of shit he wanted to do. Like, I don't know if he's going to do it or not. The point is all of a sudden there's a laundry list. I was like, I'm going to lower the corporate taxes. I'm going to build a wall in Mexico. I'm going to take round up folks that are criminals and illegal, and I'm getting them out. And it was the weirdest thing in the world, because I was like listening to a bunch of ideas being articulated. He may do them. He may not do them. He may do parts of them. I don't know. That's not the point. The point is for once, I was hearing a list of shit we were going to do rather than we're stronger together, which I don't know what that
and
means.
And her message was, we're stronger together. Go to my website. I have all the details there.
Right.
Right?
All
and the
I
details
wanted,
there were just more reiteration of the Obama details
right.
and the details
more
from more
right.
of the same.
And Drew has...
And Bush, too,
Drew
also.
Sat next to me 20 years ago, where all I said was, all I want is some businessman to get in here and start running this goddamn place like a business.
In fact, we have tape of him predicting a Trump presidency in 1996, wasn't it?
No, that was me.
Why not Warren Buffett? Why not a real businessman?
Oh, that's fine, too. I don't care. But it's always, all I wanted was a list. I wanted a hit list. Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
We got a problem. What's the problem with? We're not corporate. corporations. They're going overseas. Now, all right, what are we going to do?
Now you
That's all
with
I
Trump
ever wanted.
On The Apprentice.
In 1996, I predicted that Caitlyn Jenner, that Bruce Jenner was turning into a woman.
Yes, he did. We have a tape of him going, "Hey, guy, you got." He sits down. It's the love line. He starts. She goes, "Hey, you guys seen Bruce Jenner lately?" We're like, "Why?" He goes, "I don't know. But he's turning into a chick." Like, we go, "What?" We didn't know what he's talking about. And he goes, "I don't know what I'm talking about either. But I'm just telling you. Take a look at it. He's turning into
eyebrows. With the eyebrows a giveaway?
Hey, you know, it's that thing where." You know, there's a bunch of kids in the room, and one has a little Down syndrome or something, and you go, "Something? What's wrong with your friend?" You know what I mean? Like, you can kind of tell.
Something's going on. I can't tell what it is.
Not that all women have Down syndrome, but what I'm saying is you just notice if you go to your kid's basketball game and you see 10-year-olds, and they're running up and down the court, you'll see the one kid that's a little different, and you'll notice. It'll catch your eye. Little body movements or whatever. So I noticed something was going on with Bruce Jenner at the time in 1996. With Trump.
You described a Trump presence is what you did.
No. Remember Trump, Trump in 2008, I said he will be president in 2016.
Oh.
I gave the date.
Wow.
On that.
Pretty good.
That was based on
what do you think of? What do you think of the conspiracy theory that anybody that enters the Kardashian orbit, something negative happens to Kanye. Yeah, the males in that. I mean, come on, Drew.
Drew doesn't like conspiracy theories.
I hate conspiracy.
And plus, you're looking. You're,
what? Let me just reiterate. Just facts. The first dad died of cancer in his 40s, right?
Yeah, probably. Something happens
then
to the man of that family.
The second man becomes a woman.
Right.
The third man is in a mental hospital. The fourth man ODs with a bunch of prostitutes in Las Vegas.
Well, you know, there's one...
Do men fare well in that family?
No, but there is one thing. There's one thing that one thing that rang true to me working with Danny Bonaducci. He said to me, you know, there's always all this talk about child stars gone wrong. He said, go find any one of your buddies from, like, the Valley from when you grew up, and I'll show you X amount that got into rehab or got drunk.
Most of your friends ended up in
rehab. Right. I'm saying, so that's not a child star going on. Find me a 9-year-old who I grew up with, tag them and follow them, and I'll show you somebody who gets into rehab, gets into jail, gets into trouble, gets divorced.
Well, that's one thing I wanted to ask you.
That's not a childhood thing.
Why, if you're such a, if you're, you are a go-getter, take care of business, no stopping.
This was his question.
This is my question. When they said you're going to be on, I thought they said, what would you want to ask him? Why are all your friends that you've had, and it's really wonderful, and the Chili Peppers have done the same thing. They're still friends with all their friends.
And mind you, Bob and Chris got sober together. Chris really helped Bob get sober.
And Boehm, right? Mm-hmm. So you have the same circle of friends, which the Chili Peppers do. I think it's healthy for the person in your position or the Chili Peppers. But look at the train wreck some of your friends are.
Yeah, let's distill it down. Why are you hanging out with Ray still?
I saw Ray today.
Oh, my God.
And I saw
Chris. Did you go by the jail?
2 days ago.
No, he's not that bad. Ray's not that bad. But go ahead.
Yeah. So what? What happened to them and what happened to me?
No, but.
He couldn't understand how you start hanging out with them in the first place. And I said, here's my answer.
Because I'm imagining what Boehm was like at 15.
Yeah.
I'm not thinking like, this guy's going to help me get out of poverty and rule the universe that I know was your agenda.
No, his agenda was to play.
What was your agenda?
Play football.
Yeah, I just want to play sports.
That's it. And these were the athletes.
Was that how you were going to rule the world?
Not rule the world, just get out of misery.
Yeah, I just want to get out of wherever I was.
So was the ambition to go to college and play football?
At first, and then my family was so disjointed. I was so disjointed that even though I had some scholarships to play football, I still could never get it together to like fill out the paperwork and do the things that it would have taken.
Well, see, if you were surrounded with healthier friends, they could have helped you.
Well, you know, like Chris was a guy. Okay, so
Chris Boehm, let's explain. Chris Boehm and I got sober.
Yes.
In the same house, 4 days apart. He was just invaluable to me. I don't know that I'd be alive if it wasn't for Chris Boehm. But he's done a lot of fucked up shit in the last 21 years.
Yeah,
you know
what I mean? Yeah, he has. Well, he was a
You're
very
choosing your words carefully.
No, I'm not actually.
Chris is a good guy. I mean,
he's the greatest guy. But
we met at Pop Warner Football when we were just like 9 years old. We became best friends, and then at a certain point, it became clear that he had a great athletic ability. And so when he was in high school, in like the 11th grade, he started. I think he was like second team all league or something like that.
And he was twice the size of everybody.
Yeah, and he was getting good.
Huge.
He was getting recruited and stuff like that. And then he just sort of fell off and stopped showing up at school and stopped going out.
Tell the detail.
He basically found women, or women found him, and it was just a lot more fun to go to the reservoir, smoke cigarettes, drink beer, and bang chicks all day than it was to go do two-a-day football practice.
And he had a dad. Describe the dad.
In the San Fernando Valley.
The dad sort of set this up.
His dad was an alcoholic who was like in and out of jail, or maybe a drug addict who was in and out of jail. It's hard to tell when you're a kid.
Drove
you know.
A Firebird. Would
yeah,
like sweep into town once in a while. And take
yeah,
Chris out,
I mean, he
hunting.
Was there. He'd be there for a while, and then he'd be gone, and then he'd be there. It was like drug addict stuff. And at a certain point, we came to some sort of crossroads, and we're entering our senior year of high school, and Chris needed to go to summer school at Van Nuys High in order to get his grades to be eligible to play football for senior year.
Yeah.
And so I basically was the sort of sober voice that said, hey, man, you could, you know, you'll get a scholarship. He was actually a pretty decent student. He was much better. I couldn't read or write. So he could read and write. He was sort of bright. He was a good student.
By the way, there was nothing wrong with Adam other than he went to a hippie school where they
I never learned to read or write. But I said to him, hey, man, look, 5 weeks of summer school, 6 weeks of summer school, Van Nuys High. It was like pretty light lifting. It was like 8 to noon. It started like 2 weeks after the summer break. So it's like we'd break in the middle of June and then the 1st of July, and then you'd have to go for 6 weeks. But it was only like a half day, but it was at Van Nuys High. And I just said, come on, man, we got to do this so you can be eligible, so you can play your senior year, so you can get your scholarship or go off to college or whatever. And I remember just sort of like the first day, like he didn't go. And then the second day, I like.
Now that's a Chris I know.
Right. I showed up to his apartment, you know, and he's like, I'm going to the beach, you know. And it's like, just 6 weeks. Just let's get through it. And then you'll be eligible. And then we can play together our senior year. And then, you know, maybe we'll go to college or something. We'll get a scholarship. And it's like, nah.
So what position did Chris play and what position did you play?
He played tight end and outside linebacker, and I played guard and inside linebacker, and Ray played fullback and inside linebacker, and Ray sloughed off too and never showed up, basically, and played.
And it's not like Adam ran out and lit the world on fire from there. I mean, he was, you know, struggling for a long time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I didn't have any kind of survival motor.
You came fully packaged because by the time I really knew of you or met you, I'd been on love lines 20 times with different hoes. You had Poor Man, then you had the Eagle, and then you had who else?
Ricky.
Louis guy and Ricky, right? And then you just came on, and it was just like a completely different show.
Yeah, but he at that point had been doing construction for, what, 15 years, training at improv theaters. I mean, tell him that story. Bob doesn't know it.
Well, I wasn't going anywhere. I wasn't going to college. I wasn't doing anything. I didn't have any kind of career or anything. So I knew it was just going to be work in construction. You know, I don't mean work in construction.
With Boehm? You and Boehm?
Yeah, me, Boehm, and Ray. The reason Boehm's in construction now is because I got a job, you know, in construction. You know,
he's
not
pretty
in construction.
Fucking good at it.
Well, yeah, he's been doing it for.
He did my house in Encino
25 years or something. Now
got a little weird there for about 2 weeks where I didn't know where he was. But other than that, the house looked amazing.
Well, he was you know, doing drugs and hanging out, not doing anything. And I went, and I got a job. I got a job during earthquake rehab for the city of Los Angeles for like 18, 19 bucks an hour or something, which was like huge money. So I got him on to it. And
putting the metal things in the sides of brick apartments?
Oh, you're talking about all thread?
Yeah, yeah.
With the nut and the bolts on the outside of it.
Is
yeah,
that really going to hold these buildings up if it's 7.8? I always think that was a hustle.
They never really haven't really tested
been tested.
It. Well, I'll tell you what it'll be. It'll be better than not having them. That much I can promise you. And yes, I had to go through every one of those condemned buildings and do all that stuff. But eventually, Chris and Ray, we all started carpet cleaning out of high school. And then we all got into being laborers, basically, on construction sites. There's no apprentice program or any of this nonsense. People feel this sort of, this rose-colored glasses version of showing up, and there's some guy with a German accent. He's going to tell you how to do a dovetail joint or something. You show up, and some guy hands you a shovel and goes, "Get the fuck over there and start digging, and I'll tell you when to stop." And that's
Vietnam vet on meth or
that's about Vicodin. It. Yeah, it's just mostly. And here's a hammer. Go bust out that stucco wall. Hurry. And that's about it. Just that you spend your day cleaning up garbage.
So he hit a bottom with that. Right.
I did.
Well, you sort of decided.
The difference between me and Ray and every single one of those guys, and this is all you need, but no one embraces it, is when I was 24, 25, I was looking around and I was seeing everyone just getting drunk every weekend and spending, buying Coke and like doing stuff where it's like, hey, we're making $9, $10 an hour. Coke is 110 bucks a gram. You just bought a gram of Coke? That's 3 days work over here. You know, like I'm buying Coke, you know, and I'd be like, how can you buy $110 worth of Coke when it takes, you're going to sniff it in 10 minutes and that's a full, that's like 9 hours work, 10 hours work for us.
So delay gratification. That's the one thing he had, the ability to
say. No, the one thing I had, yes. That, and one thing is, I was looking around going, where are we going to be in 10 years? And how pretty is this scene going to be with everyone living in apartments and drinking Schaefer beer and no insurance, no money, no new truck, no nothing? Like, how's this going to work? How's this going to play out? Like, I kept looking around going, we don't have any insurance. We don't have, when it rains, you don't go to work and you don't get paid. We don't have any kind of safety net. We don't have any kind of savings account. What are we all going to be doing 10 years from now? And whatever it is, I don't want to be doing it. I don't want to be doing this. And everyone else
was totally happy.
Well, Ray and Chris are still doing it. I wonder, they're not totally happy. They don't want to do it either. Yeah. They didn't stop.
They're not doing it for $9 an hour anymore.
So he started, you know, becoming a boxing instructor, doing improv theater, studying comedy, and doing.
Yeah. So I went like, all right, what else is out there? And they were like, nothing, just more beer and Coke and, whatever.
How come you didn't try to get into Warner Brothers studio to build shit or somewhere? Because I know that whole area. You guys lived on a grid.
Nobody, you know what I mean? Once
you still
in a
live
while.
Within that grid, don't you, Adam?
No, but once in a while.
How far out?
Right here.
Here. You live here?
Yeah. Once in a while, you would hear somebody tell some story, you know, like, oh, man. Joey Duarte, he got a job, a union job, work building sets over there. And he's making 21 bucks an hour. And on Christmas, he gets double that if he works the day before Christmas. And it was like, we were all going nuts. But nobody knew anybody.
Also, you're assuming that scene. Either he or I had sort of a concept we were going for. I think what Adam saw was the same thing I saw early on. Was like, hey, this radio business is interesting.
Yeah.
Radio reaches a lot of people.
Love Lines was fun, but it really wasn't Love Lines till he did
it. I understand, but he used to listen to it.
I used to listen to it while I worked. But, you know.
And then he thought, you know the whole story about him becoming the boxing instructor for Jimmy, and that's how he got on the radio? No. You don't know the story.
Oh, nobody would. But in, as far as like the union stuff, that seemed like a pipe dream. I mean, like show up at Warner Brothers and just what? Stand like at the gate and go, yeah. let me in?
It's 4 blocks from where you grew up.
Right. So you go to Warner Brothers and you go,
I live here.
Hey, what's going on? And they go, what do you want? And you go, I don't know. I'm a carpenter. And they go, do you have an appointment? You can't get on this lot. And then you go home. Yeah. Like, I didn't know anybody.
Somehow I got into it from Chris Hoy. He was already in it. And then he said, Bobby, you want a job? And I was newly sober and I was like, doing what? And he goes, you don't have to do anything. You just walk around with me. Okay. And I basically learned.
That's what I needed.
All right. So there's a whole story about how he got on the radio. And it was, again, just pushing forward. It was not, no plan, right?
I mean, but what were you feeling leading up to when you guys met? Because I got kind of, because Eagle didn't fit on that.
What I was feeling was.
They were just switching people in and out on
you. No one,
you.
Listen, what the fuck did I know? I was there just to give information. And when it. When Ricky backed out of the TV thing, they went, who do you want? I went, I don't know what you're talking about. And it just happened. We had met like a couple months before. He had come up on Loveline and done Mr. Burcham on the show.
Oh, right? Really?
Weren't you Burcham the whole time?
Mm-hmm. The whole time.
And I went running one day, and I went, I just had this thing. I thought, yeah, I think that guy could do this thing. I think he probably has what it takes to do it. And I called somebody, and we screen tested, and that was that.
But there's never a plan. I think everyone thinks there's a plan.
All right, let's take a little break, and we get back. We got to talk about all the deaths from this year, and George Michael and Carrie Fisher. There's a lot of stuff to talk about. So we'll take a little break. Be right back.
Well, of course, you've heard me talk about Bergamot Mega Plus. It's derived from extracts of the bergamot citrus fruit. That's right. This is in the Calabria region of Italy. They use it there like crazy. They've used it for generations. It is something that's extremely rich in polyphenols. Now, I don't typically get behind supplements, but this is one I can sign off on. It is known to reduce the risk of heart disease. The Italian government has actually done some very good research on bergamot, as well as many studies to prove its effectiveness. Bergamot Mega Plus is a natural statin, right? That's an HMG-CoA reductase inhibitor. That's much like the medicines that people take, I myself take. Lowers triglycerides, raises HDL, lowers LDL. Some people take bergamot with the statin even. So it addresses also conditions faced by millions of people worldwide. That is the so-called metabolic syndrome, which is increased abdominal fat, high cholesterol, high blood sugar, high triglycerides, high blood pressure. And it helps with that. It helps with insulin resistance. Now, I do suggest that you, of course, talk to your doctor if there's any question at all. And there are alternatives pharmaceutically that many doctors may recommend. But Bergamot Mega Plus offers an all-natural option. Cardiologists and physicians all over the world have recommended it. Its effectiveness is the subject, as I said, of many good quality scientific studies. So to learn more, visit bergamot.com. That's B-E-R-G-A-M-E-T. That is bergamot.com. Or click on the Bergamot banner on our website. I suggest you do so.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's weird doing this podcast. I don't review our history very often. It's weird that he doesn't know it, and it makes Bob doesn't know it. It makes me think, I wonder how many other people don't really know how this all went down and how it happened. I think we, with your listener and our listeners, we sort of assume it. You know what I mean?
Yes, we do.
Yeah, but I don't think they were along at that point. I think your primary listeners came later.
Yeah. But they got caught up. Yeah, they caught them up.
We'll bring it up once in a while. We just never really do it in a single sitting. You know, we don't review this stuff.
Right.
And it's weird to me. I thought
it
never kind of
that Loveline,
especially somebody that knows us.
Here's how I felt about it. Lovelines was a show. We all listened to it. All of us, everybody growing up listened to it. But the thing you guys did was not love. It was a new thing. It wasn't like Lovelines.
It was the Adam and Drew show.
Yeah, yeah. It was still called Lovelines.
Yeah, I
agree. It's like Top Gear. They try to make Top Gear. They try to franchise Top Gear, and it doesn't work. Drew, everyone thought I was a huge douche because everyone always go, what's the secret to Loveline? I'd go, me and Drew to some degree.
No,
Drew.
No, you go, I'm good, and Drew's pretty good, and that's it. That's why it works.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'd go, you can't take other people and have them go do it. It's not gonna work. And they'd go, come on, it's the format. And I'd go, what's the format? Answering phone calls? That's not a format. Or if it is, everyone's free to do it. Yeah. Why not just replicate it?
Yeah. Well, the original...
And Plenty's Right, by the way.
The original thing was it was the only place on the radio that sex was talked about. I mean, like, when did you start? 84?
83, yeah.
83? Yeah, it was like...
Well, Dr. Ruth was doing it.
Not on the radio.
Oh, yes.
Well, you're not listening to that. You're listening. Well, if you want to hear the Smiths and Psychedelic Furs and then hear about sex, you listen to K-Rock.
A little more, yeah, more raw.
If you're going to put it that way, then yes. But yes.
So let's talk about this year, 2016. A lot of deaths recently. Carrie Fisher. And you were Carrie Fisher's friend.
I knew Carrie very well.
Did you meet her over the years, Adam?
No.
No, I met her a few times.
She was a tough broad.
Yeah.
What's that mean?
She talked like this.
It's like old school recovery person.
Yeah, old. And she was tough. Tough as nails.
I never knew. I have never met her.
She would always, you know, I did not know her well, but she was one of these people who would walk up to you and call you by name, no matter who you were.
Yeah.
I really always appreciated that.
Yeah.
And would have something to say. And sometimes uncomfortable, but okay.
No, and she would say uncomfortable things.
Yeah, yeah.
Now,
like
somebody...
She would say, how rude. How rude you are. Like, you know what I mean?
Somebody told me an anecdote that I did like, though, about her. I was listening to a radio, and they said at some point, like, Carrie, at some point, somebody went up to the PC media, said, you know, what was it like, you know, or do you think it's right to have your character sort of enslaved and put in this gold two-piece bikini and blah, 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 and of course, now, looking back on it, are you, like, embarrassed about it, and then what message do you think that sends? And she was like, well, a giant slug enslaved me, forced me to wear this two-piece, like, bronze bikini, so we killed him. I like the message. Yeah, I think it's a pretty good message.
Did you see Steve Martin took a bunch of crap today?
That was terrible.
Why did he take a bunch of crap?
He said, I thought she was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen in 1974 or whatever, and then I found out, not only that, she's witty, she's smart, she's all, you know, she's this amazing person. How dare you talk about how she looks?
Oh, I didn't even, you know, it's to the point, we've jumped the shark as a society at such a point that when people tell me the stories that got people into trouble, I have to ask what part got them into trouble, because the part that I hear is just sounds like a compliment. you know what I mean?
Yes.
But they have to then go back and explain to you why everything's offensive, because to my brain from the San Fernando Valley, nothing sounds nice. The other thing that's weird, though, I do find this part weird, where every celebrity has to make a comment on any other celebrity's death. Like, my feeling is, first off, no one needs to hear from me. Secondly, if I didn't know him, especially, no one needs to hear from me. And even if I did know him, no one needs to hear from me.
Well, with that in mind, let's keep going down the list. People you don't
know. Biggest, this year, I can't imagine David Bowie. There's only like the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, Bob Dylan, and David Bowie. That's the top. Mm-hmm. And one of them died this year.
Yeah, would have been nice if it was Bob Dylan, but sadly, it's Bowie. Sadly.
I see where you're going with that.
Jesus Christ.
He didn't even go pick up his
but
Nobel
David
Prize.
David Bowie was a genius compared to Bob Dylan. He really was.
He really was.
Bob Dylan was a lightweight compared to him.
This is a Bob Dylan.
No, I love like Bob Dylan, but to me, David Bowie's the greatest artist of all time, because for decade after decade after decade.
Yeah, he did something different, and his music was so innovative. And that guy's just a...
David Bowie's the biggest loss of the year.
He's a genius.
By far.
Man, there was a lot, too, to think about. So George Michael, people got very worked up about that. I was surprised... Gene Wilder. Oh.
What were you surprised about George Michael?
George Michael, what surprised me is that... Well, first of all, it went down as heart failure, which is insane that the press even reports that.
Well, why?
Heart failure is a progressive illness that gets worse over many years.
I know, but he almost died 4 years ago.
Not of heart failure.
What did he... pneumonia?
Yeah.
What was that about?
Probably the same thing that took him this time, right?
Okay, I'm going to wait and see what the autopsy says.
Yeah, well, but the point
is... You know, it's so ridiculous. If I could test right now, I'm professional at it, if you'd like to pee in a cup, I can know what drugs you're on or not on right now in 4 minutes.
By what?
But if
by
somebody
now?
Dies by having a drug test.
No, no.
But if somebody dies, we have to wait 8 weeks or 12 weeks to find out if they were on drugs.
But so on, if I urinate into a cup right now...
I could find out what drug you're on in two 2 minutes. I got, well, I'd have to run out to my car. That would take 2 minutes.
Right.
I get the strip. I'd know in 2 minutes. 4 minutes.
Yeah, I never
why
get,
does it take 12 weeks to I find never, out whether they were on drugs or either. Not?
I mean, look, I never get why, hey, we'll have the Michael Jackson autopsy results back in June. It's like, I'm always like, well, just fast track him. I know. So you fished a bunch of hobos out of the L.A. River. They're in front of Michael Jackson? Kick him. Kick him to the back of the line.
Why is it, Drew? Why is it?
I don't understand it, to tell you the truth. I assumed it's administrative.
It's part of what takes the power out of addiction is killing people.
Yeah. Well, so we surmised George Michael died of addiction, right?
Yeah.
He struggled with it for years. He was in a $300,000 a month program or something.
I want to start one of those. I mean, Adam, you want to back that?
Those to get involved.
Those people should be shot. I mean, those whoever runs that is well,
whoever's dumb enough to pay $300,000 a month.
No, but here's my point, and it's Bob's point. It should be everyone's point, which is when the person possibly dies of the abuse, drug abuse, and then they reported it. They reported as we died of heart failure, you know, which everyone dies of heart failure.
No, no one dies of heart failure. You die of your
heart. Your heart stops beating.
Well, that's not heart failure.
Oh, I'm calling it failure to beat. Failure to comply.
Heart failure is a muscle disorder of the heart where it has a pump fail.
Well, the heart stopped beating. That's the failure of that.
Sudden cardiac death.
Okay. Well, that's the problem totally is different. This. Once they do this, then they wait 9 weeks. Then they come out with the autopsy. Yeah.
And nobody cares.
By then,
look at how many people have died. By then, three more people have died.
No, the second guy from Wham had probably died in between now and the time the autopsy comes out, and we're past it. So what we need is a sort of immediate to attach it to the circumstance.
I agree.
Even when Philip Seymour Hoffman died with drugs next to his nightstand, they wouldn't say that he died of drugs.
I know.
So if you're speculating, you would speculate that this is
drug related,
either directly or indirectly through the years of abuse put his body.
And I would bet it more directly.
You think more directly?
Now, Drew, I want to ask you something on the Leonard Cohen death. He was in his mid-80s, right?
Yeah.
He was talking about he's ready to go.
Yeah.
Do you know that?
No, but that's
made his last album.
It's called do that in the 80s.
It's a dark record card. You want it darker, and then he said at the press conference he couldn't perform because he's getting older and whatever. Mm-hmm. And he said, "It's time for me to go."
Yeah.
And then like 4 months later, he died. Well, do people do that?
Oh yeah.
You can kind of wish yourself to
death. No, it's not wish. They sort of are tired. They know they're sick. They know that things are running down, and they kind of go, "Eh." I've had people say, "I have lived too long." Too. I've had that a lot. People, particularly men in their 90s, will say, Jesus, my problem is I am too fucking old. I should have been dead a few years ago.
But if they can articulate that, isn't there some joy in life?
Not when you're really decrepit. Decrepitness is something people don't get to see. They're all away in nursing homes and things.
Yeah.
It's pretty miserable. Yeah,
I agree.
And then I always think to myself, yeah, maybe their peers walked into the fire at Omaha Beach. I don't know who had it worse. I don't know. You know, some of these guys living 10 years just in misery and stuff. It's like,
Well, yeah.
It's a hard thing.
Those Omaha Beach guys were 19.
Yeah,
that was their problem.
Yeah, there was 40 good years in between.
All right, fair enough. Wait, I want to go through some of the other people that we've lost.
Florence Henderson.
Al Thicke, Florence Henderson. I mean, Anton Yelchin. Remember Anton? Did we ever? The kid from Star Trek.
Yeah, with the Jeep and the crazy story. And
what the hell was wrong with that? You're a car guy. What the hell happened there?
Well, you try to figure it out, and sadly, like, you think, oh, well, he was drunk. Like,
no,
he got out.
We actually knew him. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but that's...
Doesn't mean he wasn't drunk.
I'll be drunk in 3 hours. Let's not judge here. It's the holidays. What I'm saying is that...
So he was going to close his gate, right?
It sounded like a story where it's like, oh, a guy got out of the car, maybe had a couple pops. Yeah. It was like a Saturday night. Seemed like the gate didn't work or whatever, and that he didn't put the car into park. But what happened was is the Jeep was defective.
Yeah. They pop out of park.
So he had it.
So you got to put the emergency brake on.
Nobody does that anymore. And
I just did the foot thing. You can't see that on the radio.
You want to talk about a lawsuit.
Yeah.
That's a lawsuit.
And his parents' ice skating instructors. One of them taught well, one of them taught our friend, Susan's best friend's daughter. The mom taught Paulina.
So
we knew them. We knew them.
To me,
well.
You know, to
it's
me,
tragic.
You know, the Leonard Cohen thing is like, all right, I'm 84 years old. Fine. Right. He had a great career. But
do you think you can wish yourself to die? Or just kind of resolve it and wind things down?
No, I think there's that part when you get. I think there's a part where it'd be difficult to do if you were 19 and a gymnast. Yeah. But you couldn't just sit and will it. You got to use a shotgun for that.
Right.
But at that point where the guy's 91 and he's hooked up to the respirator and the grandson comes in and says, it's okay to go now or whatever, and the guy closes his eyes. Yeah, I do think there's
that. You get tired of
that
fighting
life
it.
Energy
yeah.
where yeah. you yeah. just kind of can do that.
We forget
so
Nancy Reagan, Muhammad Ali.
I wasn't
Ali.
Sad when Leonard died.
Yeah, right. You should. There are deaths you should celebrate.
The George Michael thing seems sad because he was alone at Christmas.
And young.
He was alone. There was nobody in his house, Adam.
Well, if there's nobody in your house at Christmas time, and you're that guy, that does feel like some drugs were going down.
Yeah, of course.
I know. Why would you be alone?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
did you read this stuff that he was looking out the window and the people saw him in his window by himself in his house on Christmas Eve?
What are you doing then? There are three that we've not heard a lot of talk about recently that are big deals this year. Gene Wilder.
Yeah. Gene Wilder was old, though.
Yeah, it's true.
How old was he?
It's 83.
Yeah, that's old.
I agree. Gary Shandling.
Yeah.
That was weird because he played basketball a lot. Now, let's get into that. You're a doctor. Mm-hmm. How can Gary Shandling, though
Thicke,
he didn't
Alan
look
Thicke
like.
Died on the ice.
I know.
To play
and
hockey.
Gary Shandling played basketball all the time, was athletic, ate right.
Nothing to do with anything.
So you can just drop dead at 60.
If you're not screening for vascular disease and stuff.
Are you screening for vascular disease?
No.
Neither am I.
Well, get your calcium score.
I'll get my calcium score. I did. I'm getting ready to
get on a treadmill. You smoked for a while.
Do that. I'm going to do. I did it one time about 10 years ago. I did a full workup where the guy got you on the treadmill and did the thing and put all the electrodes and stuff on you. And he made a big mistake. He said to me, "You got the heart of a fireman."
Oh.
He said, and I was like, "Good."
But that doesn't say anything about your plaque.
You got a light and a martini.
But that doesn't say anything about the plaque.
A light and a martini.
What's that?
Does that say anything about the plaque? Drew's got me scared shitless about plaque.
Well, it does.
Well, your friend Vinny too. He scared the shit out of you too.
Right, Vinny Tortorich.
Right.
But listen, the plaque causes narrowing of the artery.
I'm convinced I have a ton of plaque.
Well, then get your calcium score.
Go get worked up.
Yeah, but also on a treadmill, if there is anything restricting blood supply to the heart, the muscle won't perform normally, and that's what we pick up on the treadmill.
Okay. So is it better or worse if you have plaque and you have a bad heart and whatever to be outgoing and play basketball like Gary Shandling did, or not?
Better to exercise, but you really have to be realistic about what may or may not be going on with you.
I used to play basketball.
And you should be aggressive as hell about it. I mean, I've been on a statin since I was like 35 because we have horrible vascular disease.
Funny side note, you know who's the biggest ball hog in Hollywood basketball? You know the guy Richard from Law & Order? What's his name? Richard, what? He's a comedian too. With the sunglasses.
Oh, Richard Lewis?
No.
Yeah.
What?
Meltzer.
Yeah, Richard Meltzer. Yeah. No,
Belzer.
Belzer.
Yeah, Richard Belzer. Ball hog. Never pass it.
Well, you know what's interesting about him?
What?
I remember I interviewed him once, and many, many years ago, and I remember thinking he was one of the first guys that ever traveled with a medical dog,
you know,
whatever. It wasn't a support dog. This was a service dog that sniffed out seizures or whatever. And I remember thinking to myself, God, this guy's a narcissist. Like, I remember thinking of that. So when you tell me he didn't share the rock, it kind of fits with my profile of the guy who was traveling with the 80-pound poodle on the airplane circa 2001. You know what I mean? Like, when it was insane to get on an airplane with a dog. Now it's commonplace, but back then when it was insane, I just remember doing I've interviewed him a couple times and been on Stern with him a couple times, and I remember thinking I didn't dislike him, but I thought this guy's a very crazy self sense of here's
he's
what
got
I
his own thing going.
Here's speaking what I got Stern, going.
Another death in 16. Joey Boots.
I don't know who Joey Boots.
Well, he's a big, big guy, right?
Yeah. This is what I wanted to bring up. This is what I was leading up to us, and the guy we knew pretty. I mean, given how few much little time we spent with him, I felt like we knew him pretty well. Is Gary Marshall?
Yeah.
I mean, we played baseball with him a couple times. He came on the show a couple times. One of the nicest human beings.
Yes.
Ever. I mean, just
that's Penny Marshall's dad.
Yeah.
Brother.
Oh, brother or sorry. Dad? Yeah. No. Yeah.
Brother.
Right, brother right. or dad?
Brother.
I think it's a brother, yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Older brother, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Yeah, very nice guy.
Oh, my God. And, you know, some of the iconic films of the last 20 years.
Yeah.
Gary Marshall films.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing. It's like nobody – he's up there with Henry Winkler. No one has a bad thing to say about the guy.
Yeah, yeah.
They cannot find a bad thing to say about him.
Leon Russell.
Yeah, I loved him. Me too. I went and saw him play at Pappy and Harriet's. Because here's another thing. How many musicians do you go to thinking, I better go because it might be the last time to see him? I went and saw Leon Russell, and it was the last time to go see him.
Wow.
I had that with Siegfried and Roy. Sounds stupid. I know. I wish that was a joke, but I said...
They're going to retire?
No. I said when we were in Vegas shooting Crank Yankers, which was a show we had to shoot out of Vegas for various reasons. But
you can't do crank calls out of other states.
Right. So yeah. I said...
And record them.
To like David Alan Greer or whoever was out there doing the taping with me, and I was sort of in charge, I said, why don't we go see Siegfried and Roy tonight? Because we're done taping at like 6 o'clock. And now we're going to go to strip club. We're going to go buffet. We're going to buffet in a strip club. We're going to gamble. Like, what are we going to do? I said, we should see Siegfried and Roy. And David Alan Greer, especially, was leading the chorus of no fucking way. Like, come on now. I'm not doing that. We don't do that. We're young. We're hip. This is cool. We should go do something. And I remember what I said to him. I said, listen, I'm sure in, 1976, someone said, let's go see Elvis.
Yeah.
And the other guy said, are you kidding? That old bloated fat guy? That's for grandpa, Styx is in town.
Yeah.
Let's see them. They're hot. They're young. They're with it. They're what's going on. And so the person didn't see Elvis. And now they wish they'd seen Elvis because Elvis is not going to go on forever. And I just remember going, one day you're going to want to be in that group that went, I saw Siegfried and Roy. Like you were going to be in that group that I saw Elvis. And it was a number of months later, but it wasn't much.
Did you go?
Yeah, we went.
Did Zag
and then, Dag was pissed the whole time.
Did it seem like the lion was going to bite them?
I had an inkling.
Really?
I had no inkling.
What?
No, I had no idea. They seemed to do what they were told.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They aired some of out of my shows. We took the week off between Christmas and New Year's, and they aired some old Dag shows people were chatting about online stuff. We should get him. I haven't seen him in forever.
I haven't either. He usually he when he's busy, you never see
last
him.
Last time I saw him, he was in Porgy and Bess on Broadway. We went backstage and saw him. I think we saw the show twice, even.
And, yeah, he's great.
Great.
But he can go to San Diego. Well, he was on a TV show. He'll go to San Diego to break those shows in and be there for 6 months. San Diego's where they break in all those Broadway shows.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, I don't know why.
I didn't know either.
But you got to pick a place, right?
Yeah, what the hell? Why not?
Yeah, so he'll go to like San Diego for like 4 months and do a show and then go to Broadway with it. Hmm. So go work it out, get it on his feet or whatever it is.
You don't think Glenn Howerton's a friend. You know Glenn from Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
Yeah.
He goes down there to do Shakespeare. You don't think about Shakespeare in San Diego. But they've got, I guess, a big theatrical thing down there.
Well, it's probably Tijuana they do it in, but they probably stay in San Diego. Probably, but yes, because you think Shakespeare when you think Tijuana.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah, number two, Puerto Vallarta, but number one, Tijuana.
I think about a lot of things in Tijuana.
not Shakespeare, though, no?
No, not really.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Well, but the death thing, what you didn't mention, the biggest selling artist of all the artists who died this year, you didn't mention because nobody really thinks about the Eagles as a great band.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think of them as a great band?
I think of them as a very talented band. I try to make a distinction between bands I like and then bands that I don't like who stink, and then bands who I don't like who are very good.
Yes, yes.
And or you can't penalize a band just because their song is fucked out and you've heard it too many times. It doesn't make it a bad song. There's songs that are bad.
And how many times have we heard Hotel California in our lifetimes of three?
Right, millions. Good song. It's a good song. Look, New Kid in Town is a great song. Witchy Woman is a shit song. So I don't want to. So what I my feeling with the Eagles is always like they were together. They were fairly annoying, even though they were a good band. But they're fucking Witchy Woman and all this kind of shit. It drove me nuts.
What about the lasting power of them? They're 24 hours a day.
I have this theory. They went, look, we can stay together and be pretty annoying, or we can break up and all do solo projects and be super annoying.
Yeah.
And that's when we'll get Dirty Laundry and Sunset Grill and
Miami Vice,
Smuggler's Blues and all this kind of stuff. So it's like they're kind of like Hall & Oates to me, in that they're a talented, good band that has a whole bunch of shitty songs and then a bunch of really good songs too. And the Eagles are a great band. Like, you could never say the Eagles are a great band.
Have you seen them?
I would go see them, but if they played Witchy Woman, I'd have to go out in the parking lot and like smoke a cigarette and then come back. I couldn't sit and watch
like the Eagles?
Talk about Witchy Woman.
I saw them in 1976 at the Shrine Auditorium when Linda Ronstadt and Jackson Brown came out and played with them that night.
So you were into them?
For about 10 minutes.
For the Hotel California album?
Yeah.
You know what they? We know what they are. They're a very talented band.
Well, he's dead now.
Who's a little downtrodden? They're a little low.
You're talking in the present tense and throwing me off. The guy is dead.
No, the Eagles haven't died.
Yes, Glenn Frey died.
Well, there's Don Henley and there's.
I don't think they can go on without the Glenn Frey.
Well,
right?
They've had 10 different iterations, anyway. And
so you think the Eagles will go on in 2017?
Some version of it. Yeah, why not? As long as people
like the
listen.
Dead or something?
Well, wait a second. If there's a nickel to be made, come on now.
Yeah.
You've had a band that's had 10 different guys rotate through there. You get Bob Welch in there. And
right.
Yeah.
See, Bob Welch.
You're not used to.
Yeah.
Bob's not used to guys who know music. He's used
to
you.
I know.
Bob
but you
Welch.
Get, you get him. And you get Glenn. Oh wait, who didn't die?
Glenn Don Henley. Joe Walsh.
Yeah, Joan Walsh or Bob Welch or whatever.
Joe
Walsh and Bob Welch.
That would be great if Bob Welch replaced, and then you have Joe Walsh.
All you
got to
get is Joe Walsh a lot, right?
I like Joe Walsh. Yeah. He's funny too. And all you just get three or four of those guys scaring two other guys, and you're back.
There you go.
You're touring with the Eagles, so they're the best band I never want to hear again.
Glenn Frey is the most successful, wealthiest musician of those that died. Mm. And you don't even think of him as top tier, do you, Drew?
No, when you point it out, yeah.
It goes Bowie, so I want to rate it. I know it's hideous and people will hate us and whatever, but it's Bowie 17 floors above everybody else, then Prince, then Leonard, I think.
Prince songs don't hold up at all. They're shit. They're shitty songs from the 80s. He's a super talented dude.
You know what
who
does
wrote
hold
really
up?
Shitty songs.
His
that
songs...
no one will admit to, by the way. I swear to God, everybody I've ever spoken to, it's like Prince has a picture of you with a corn cob shoved up your ass, and you don't want to say anything. Because they go like, oh, no, that Dove's Cry or that all that sexy bullshit
all
from the ass, it's horrible.
No.
They're bad.
His
they're
hits
bad.
Don't hold up.
Not at all. Not at all. They were bad then.
They sound dated.
They
drums.
Sounded like shit when they came out. And I love the man dearly. I'm a huge fan. His hits sound like shit. They were for stupid people. They're for 19-year-olds. They sucked, and they sound
Raspberry
bad now.
Raspberry Beret is a bad song.
It's a pop song, which to me is not even on the annoying, you know, sort of hit parade. I say to all my friends who do this thing all the time, I'll say it to my wife. They'll go, hey, Prince, Beastie Boys. Love Beastie Boys. I love Prince. I go, really? You do? Yeah, I love them. You do? You love them? Hey, you do? I love them. Yeah, I do. How come I never heard you listening to Prince? Because guess what?
True.
I love John Hyatt and I love Graham Parker. And guess what you hear when you're in my fucking car? You hear me listening to John Hyatt because I love John Hyatt. And I'm not defending.
You like John Hyatt?
I love John Hyatt.
See?
John Hyatt's good. That's kind of the
Have
difference.
Have a little faith in me.
But the, The difference is, how come you love the Beastie Boys and Prince so much? I never hear you listening to Beastie Boys and Prince.
I think what they like is the feeling they evoke from the memories
That's
of
right,
the time.
Which doesn't yeah. make it good.
Yeah.
Prince,
Drew, what's
Prince
Drew's
is a
favorite band? You guys have been married for 35 years. What's Drew's favorite band?
Oh. He doesn't. No, he likes opera.
No, but no, pop music. I would say Psychedelic Furs right off the top of my head.
I like Psych Furs, but I would go like Stones, Doors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't go wrong
Prince,
with the Doors.
Yeah.
I think Prince was like an incredibly gifted guy who wrote sort of jack-off pop songs, and maybe the deep cuts
yes.
were good.
The deep cuts
are
good.
But the hits suck, and they sound like dated
That's true.
Shit.
That's true. That's what I was going to say. He has.
All right, who's after
he
Prince has, on your list?
So, well, Leonard. It would go Bowie way above.
Prince,
and then Prince, then Leonard Cohen.
Then Glenn Frey.
I don't know. Don Henley is the voice of the Eagles to
Leon
me.
Russell going to be above mm-hmm. Glenn Frey?
What do you think?
Maybe.
Night. Such that I love Leon Russell. I mean,
do you think such a
I'm up
a
on
night?
The tight rope. Yeah. One side's pain and one is hope.
Oh, I love Leon Russell.
He wrote this Masquerade.
Oh,
and he yeah. wrote Song for You. And I'm singing my song.
He wrote a lot of other people's songs, too, yeah. that you wouldn't be aware of.
So,
my band I love was, and Leon Russell was in the band, was Joe Cocker, Mad Dogs, and Englishmen.
Yeah, he's in the movie, mm-hmm. too, yeah. He's
got Did you see that movie?
Hat. Yeah, I got it on DVD.
I ended up treating some of those people, you know, many years later.
Sure.
Did I tell you? You don't know this. They would all end up at Las Encinas with acid-related brain injuries and things. A lot of them ended up in nursing homes.
Well, a lot
wow.
of
wow,
yeah,
alcoholics.
No,
alcoholics
no, no.
Too.
They were all talking about the same thing. They were did so much hallucinogen back then. That particular group.
Yeah. Back when they thought it made
so
you creative.
Has there ever been a year like this with this many icons
dying? What stands out for me this year is it seems a little bit extraordinary, and it's more about aging than about drug addiction.
Well, this is the point. Just like, do you know, remember the panic Drew had as we were getting criticized more and more as celebrity rehab people would die?
Yeah.
The thing I didn't have the heart to tell him was, these aren't the people I expected to die.
Oh, right.
Right?
Right.
Because I didn't expect Rodney to die or
right.
Mindy McCready right. or, you know what I mean?
So they didn't
and
die
so
of addiction.
When he was,
they died of other things.
It didn't matter at that point.
Yeah,
know. You know what I mean? So the people on here, most of them you expected to die, but there's going to be a year that's going to be bigger than 2016. Everybody's saying, let's get rid of 2016. Too many people have died. There's a year coming. You're talking about all the Stones are in their mid-70s.
Right. The baby boomers are going to start dropping out.
Dylan's older than that.
Yeah.
There's going to be a year where like three or four of the biggest icons in the history of mankind die.
Well, you're,
what are we going to do without Dylan?
but Bowie's one of those people.
Wall of banjos. You know? Well, somebody
Bowie
props
is,
them up.
Bowie is Jesus equal Christ. To those people.
And remember, George Harrison died not long ago.
Dylan's still here, and George has been gone for 15 years.
Well, what about Dick Cheney's still here? Every time somebody dies,
well,
I think
that's true.
Of that.
But I mean, I would swap. Oh, my God.
Who would you trade out
like
with Dylan
Harrison?
For?
Sure
oh, yes. It's 1,000 times better than Dylan.
Yeah, yeah.
Glenn Frey?
Dylan. They've caused a lot of damage to Eagles. The problem is, look, they wrote who wrote Dirty Laundry? Because is he the dead one?
Is it? No.
Don Henley?
Don Henley. Oh,
all right. Well, he's caused a lot of pain.
You know, I'll tell you a funny Don Henley story. You want to hear it?
Yes.
I was in A&M Studios. Danny Kortschmar was working with him, and I got to sit in while they're editing a single called Heart of the Matter. You know, trying
like
to get
that
down
song.
To the heart of the matter.
Did you see his documentary?
So they're editing.
No.
Can you get him a copy of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can get it.
Yeah, because he
if
should
you'll
see
watch
this.
It. It'll be fun.
It's a piece. There's some K-Rock history in there, too. It'll freak you
I'd
out.
I love this.
Yeah.
They found some footage from me and him in Loveline in early 90s or late 80s.
Yeah, radio.
Where
of
for
it.
A second, he like sobered up and started helping someone.
And he said I would be a good counselor.
I went, you know, dude, you'd be a great therapist one day.
I'd love to see that.
Together.
Yeah.
I don't know how they found that. Anyway, you're listening to the
So I'm listening. I'm just like the dumb punk rock musician that's crossing over and being mentored by all these cool, you know, no knowledgeable people. And they're editing the original song, the track, Heart of the Matter. It's like 5 minutes, 20 seconds. They need to take a minute and 40 out of it to have it be a single. And they're going through all different chops and they're listening to it and talking back and forth. And then they finally have one. And then Danny turned to me and goes, that's right. And I said, you cut the verse out that leads you to what Heart of the Matter means. And Don Henley turned and said, people don't listen to lyrics.
Wow. Well, that's their problem. Well, you know, it is funny.
You know what I mean? Because I'm thinking about, like, you just chopped out so that the verse story that tells what you're getting down to the heart of the matter about, you just chopped it all out so you can't follow it and understand what the chorus is. And they were just like, people don't listen that closely.
I love lyrics.
Me too. That's why you like John Hyatt.
That's why I like John Hyatt. I don't like Prince. Or the Beastie Boys. But anyway.
Do you cry when you, sometimes when you're driving in your car alone?
If you get the right song.
Heart of the Matter.
Heart of the Matter is a great song.
It's about his wife, right?
And here's, I don't know what it's about. It's a very good song.
I think it's about it.
But the thing about you're cutting out a minute 40 for the radio cut is my roommate, Ralph Garman, had the album or the CD or whatever. And he'd play it when we lived together. And I liked the song.
It's a good song.
I really like that song. And it's you know. And then we're driving in the car, or I was driving in the car, and I was hearing the radio version of it. And I was saying to him, it's missing one whatever.
He
was saying,
how weird is that?
We got into an argument. He was like, no, it's the same song. And I said, no. And you know how I'm wired this way. I said, sonically. I said, when we listen to it at home, there's one more. They go back to it one more time. Well, I've listened to it three times on the radio. It's missing that
and it's
one,
missing the whole verse that makes
that
the chorus
part.
Make sense.
And bringing it all home is all Don Henley's fault.
It's missing this part. And I was driving around in 1993, taking very sharp notice of the fact that they cut a chunk of this song out.
What's the song that always gets you? Last question. What's the song that always gets you?
That
it's got to be a John Hyatt.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the reason John Hyatt is better than everyone else is because everyone else is singing about, you know, get on the back of my hog, woman, we'll go to the edge of town, and I love you. I love you, right, you know, whatever it is. John Hyatt has a song. It's just pure acoustic, and it's called Learning How to Love You. And it's all song, not about what you got to do or what I'm going to do to you, but how I needed to learn how to love you.
Yeah.
Which is a sort of backwards approach to a love song. Not, here's how much I love you. Yeah. I die for you. It's, I had to learn, and it's funny because Hootie and the Blowfish had their hit album was called Cracked Rear View, and he starts off by going, there was this life that I was living through some cracked rear view.
Oh, wow.
So he's just basically staring at his life through a broken rear view mirror and just looking in the past. And I said, oh, that's a good, that was a good line right there. And he said, where no future was given to a heart untrue. And it's like, oh, he's living his life looking in a rear view mirror that's cracked. Yes. And the Blowfish got that. And they're like, we're going to name our album Cracked Rear View. But yeah, lyrics matter. And the part where he has to learn how to love him. And it's really raw and it's really acoustic, and that's a song that'll get
you. We're gonna need to follow up someday, because if you love lyrics, because I'm a lyric guy, how can you not like Bob Dylan?
I knew that's where he's going. We gotta wrap it up.
I like his lyrics.
So there you go. Okay.
Well, I do want to say this about the 125th time. He said he ain't going to work on Maggie's farm no more. Like, Maggie'd be like, hey, Spindly Jew, get the fuck out of here. Like, who could be a worse farmhand than Bob Dylan? Like, he's threatening not to work on that. Imagine telling Bob Dylan, hey, we got to take those hay bales and get them up to the loft. We do that before the sun rises. Then we're going to slot the pigs. We're going to slaughter a couple chickens. And he'd be like, And by the way, you're wearing those tight jeans and a boot. That's not going to work. You need something
to work
in. Take
your sunglasses off.
Take your sunglasses off. Hey, Bob, stop smoking. This is a farm. We need you to work.
Go see Everything Adam at adamcarolla.com.
Welcome to 2017,
ladies and
gentlemen.
You guys
got to
have your own music show together. Come on over to Adam and Drew's show, and we'll bring you into a little lyric conversation. A reminder, everybody, be sure to check us out at drdrew.com and check out the links, all the great podcasts there. The Adam and Drew show is there. Dr. Drew podcast is there. Also, please, if you don't have iTunes, listen on your Android phone, and don't forget to check out the new podcast with Dr. Spaz, the Weekly Infusion. That's right, and the Mike and Drew podcast is there as well. And Adam and I, every day, at either drdrew.com or the Adam and Dr. Drew show.com or adamcarolla.com,
And we really appreciate you guys being around and supporting these little pods. And, Adam, thank you for everything you've
thank
done
you,
for us,
man.
And for me and for our family.
We
and
appreciate it.
It's a new year. And so, you know, it's I enjoy it. You know, do you listen to our podcast?
No, I got to. I don't listen to podcasts.
Put people on the spot.
No, I don't listen to podcasts.
I don't watch his docs. He doesn't listen to our podcasts.
Right. That's a New Year's
resolution. We have an agreement.
This is a resolution.
I will ingest none of your art. You ingest none of my art.
We're going to get his doc for Adam.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'm going to make you listen to a couple of our
shows. I have to figure out how to make the Bluetooth work in my car. I can't get it out of my phone into my car.
What?
I can't play podcasts
in my
car.
One of the kids will tech
you. Yeah, fair enough. Remind everybody to click on the Amazon banner for all your shopping needs. We appreciate your support, and please send us your thoughts and comments on iTunes. We see those 5-star ratings and appreciate it. Subscribe today. We are ready for more of this life in 2017, provided you keep us going, so we really appreciate it. We also want to thank our friends at Bergamet for being so supportive as a sponsor. We appreciate the many products they have to offer. So go to their website and check out their new products. And I, of course, am enthusiastically behind the Mega and the Pro Plus for treating metabolic syndrome, lowering cholesterol, reducing risks of vascular pathology and heart disease. And it's something to discuss with your doctor. So to learn more, go again to Bergamet, BERGAMET.com, or just go to thislifepodcast or drdrew.com and click on the Bergamet banner on our website.
All right.
Till then, we'll see you
next time. Peace out.